Accession number 16339, Reel 2.
Mr. Benson, Reel 2. What happened to you next?
Once things were organised, then we had to retrace our steps and go back up over the mountain with a view to going to the mainland, which in this case was Salonika.
So you had to go to trek back to Suda Bay?
We had to go back over the mountains in the direction of Suda Bay. Yeah.
What was the return journey like?
Pretty difficult, because you need proper boots for mountaineering, and your boots generally, just get ripped to shreds, so you more or less finish up without boots.
Were you given any food or water on the trek?
Very little. Water and hard biscuits, if I remember rightly.
Were there any who couldn't make it?
Not to my knowledge.
What was the port that you disembarked from in Crete?
We went, obviously, from Suda Bay to Salonika.
And the conditions in the boat?
Terrible. Mm-hmm.
In what sense?
Crammed like sardines in the hold of the ship. If we'd have been torpedoed by a sub, of course, the lot would have gone, I would imagine.
How much space did you have, personally?
Nothing. No space.
Enough to lie down?
Hardly.
And how were they behaving on the ship, your captors?
All right, but of course our troops, were getting weaker all the time. Having had, in the last 5 days on Crete, nothing to eat, and very little since.
How long did this journey take?
I think it was only a matter of a few hours, but I can't really remember it accurately. But finally we got to Salonika.
What was the scene when you disembarked there?
We got there and we went then to an old Turkish barracks.
And the conditions there?
Pretty grim. Because at this time, we were suffering from malnutrition, dysentery, and malaria.
What did you have yourself?
I had that lot. As everybody, the majority had dysentery, malnutrition, and malaria. And of course, when you start to get weak, you get spots before the eyes. So you sit down before you fall down.
Was there any medical help available?
None.
Did food and drink now start to come?
Very little. The Greek Red Cross tried to send some food up to the camp, and it was refused. So all we had then was water and hard biscuits. And, of course, that's as a result of all this, then we had to contend with lice.
How were your captors behaving here?
Generally, all right, but you had the youngsters, the young show-offs, showing off with their Tommy guns around the camp. And if you... it didn't need much for them to start firing. So the best thing to do is keep quiet.
Do you know of anybody who was shot?
Not at that stage, but I know the Australians thought they found a way out of the Ada Salonica via the sewers. And the Germans got to know about it and set up machine guns. And that was a reception the Aussies got when they came out the other end.
Did you get any help from the Greeks?
If it had been left to them, we would have. They were powerless.
How long were you at Salonika for?
I would say less... around about 10 days, I would think.
And
getting worse all the time. And then... in August, we left to go to Germany by train.
Can you describe it, the journey?
Yes. Horrendous. 8 days on a train, 35 men to a wagon. Everybody was malnutrition, dysentery, a majority with malaria and lice. No water, apart from what you had to drink with you. And that took 8 days. But we did stop at Leningrad, and not, we stopped at Belgrade. And the Red Cross gave us a piece of bacon. And I remember I licked my fingers clean, having not washed for over a week or so, and never enjoyed bacon so much in all my life. Yeah.
How much bacon did you get?
Oh, just, I suppose no more than about 2 or 3 ounces each man.
It was cooked bacon, was it?
Yes, yes.
Just the bacon or inside bread?
That's all, just bacon. Mm.
Did anybody try to escape on the journey?
One can't say. There may have been. With the result that you'll be shot, attempting to. But it would have been most difficult, I think. Certainly, while the train was moving, no chance at all.
And the
because each wagon, there was an armed guard on each one outside.
And the behaviour of the guards on the journey?
Oh, generally, they were all right.
Where did you finally arrive?
We arrived at Aristeleg, where we, having got off the train, or tried to, we more or less collapsed and went to a stalag whereby all your clothes were burnt. You had, you were deloused. Your hair was cut off. You were given clothing, which either would be Polish or French.
Do you know the name of the stalag?
I was under 4A.
What was this place?
Pardon?
What was the name of the place?
It was in Upper Silesia, between Leipzig and Dresden.
And this was to be your home, was it?
That was...
Or was it just transit?
That was in transit, preparing to work a coal mine. That's a surface coal mine, whereby they take the top off so that you're working on the surface all the time, where they produce this brown coal.
And that was the job you had to do, was it?
Well, it was, as far as I was concerned, I had an injured finger, gangrene had set in, and as a result of that, I went to hospital, which was very fortunate for me, where you have allied doctors in charge of the hospital, looking after all allied troops. And personally, if two Polish officers had had it their way, I'm sure I'd have been there for the duration, because they were keen on football, and so was I. And I had played with them, and I was always on their side. So it was a good opportunity for me. They avoided work.
Where was the hospital?
I don't honestly know. It would be in that area between Dresden and Leipzig. And following my recovery, I then went to a campsite, the coal mine, called Wiednitz.
This was for the brown coal mining?
Yes, yeah.
That's when you started work on it?
That's... Yes, this was probably end of October, beginning of November, 41, when snow was about 2 feet deep and the temperature 30 below.
What were you expected to do in the way of work?
Well, we were expected to work. I was fortunate, having missed the initial, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, when the men would barely be able to walk to work, because having suffered from malnutrition. They were so weak. And they would leave the camp in the morning with nothing to eat or drink, having eaten everything the evening before. And then they would be down the mine all day with nothing to eat or drink until they went back to the barracks, when they would get the meal, which was then potato soup and ersatz coffee and brown bread.
Did you have to do the same thing?
Afterwards, I did. Physically, of course, you were too weak. You could only just about walk to the mine. But I was lucky in the fact that I'd been in hospital for a couple of weeks.
Was it pick and shovel, though?
It would have been to a certain extent. But at this particular time, 30 below, it means that the machinery, which are giant machinery, which is used to take the top off, take the top soil off, they couldn't work because the ground was frozen. Therefore, they had to dig holes in the ground, put explosives in to loosen the soil so the machinery could work. Well, at that time, the chaps were so weak that it would take them probably best part of the day to dig two or three holes with an iron bar to dig down about a couple of feet to put explosives in to free the soil. And that was the setup as it was at that particular time, everything being frozen. So there wasn't much produced, I wouldn't imagine, at that time.
What happened to you next?
Well, I was one of the number who would be down there all day with nothing to eat or drink, just trying to keep warm, till you got back to the barracks in the evening when you drew your, what was supposed to be food, and you just stoked the old fire up and went to bed and got up in the morning, nothing to eat or drink, and went out to work.
How many were on this work party?
There would be about, I would think about 50 men in this particular camp. And you worked two Sundays out of three. So you had one Sunday off in 3 weeks. And you got messed about so much on that Sunday that you wished you'd gone to work.
How did they mess you about?
Well, though we had nothing, they wanted to keep searching all your belongings and generally make life uncomfortable in the camp on that Sunday. And this from a man in charge who's only a corporal. Of course, a German corporal, he got quite a lot of power. Never mind a Feldwebel. So it was a rather miserable place in those days.
How were you treated by the guards?
By the guards who were elderly, were all right. As a matter of fact, it got to a stage whereby it wasn't them that ill-treated the guards, it was the chaps who ill-treated the guards. He used to pinch his rifle and run off with it. Bearing in mind that the guard would be elderly people, or you might have people who were Polish origin who were used as guards, and that was the early days.
When you say elderly, about how old are they?
Oh, late 50s.
Any contact with civilians?
Yes. You have civilians working in the mind, and if you got to know them on your own, then you got treated decently. And if they could help you, they would.
In what way?
In any way, unbeknown to the authorities, of course.
Giving you things?
Well, they didn't have much to give you. Because in those days, even in 1941, the German civilians were having a terrible time, food-wise. And I could see the civilians, I could see them losing weight.
So how could they help you if they didn't have much in the food?
Well, the only there were one or two ways. If they had chicken, and we had Red Cross parcels, if and when that started, then you could swap, you could barter with them for some eggs if you had some coffee. But of course, all this takes time. You don't get Red Cross parcels as soon as you get there, and it all takes time. And so really what I'm talking about now is from about from May 42, when we first start to get Red Cross parcels. But until that time, of course, you really roughed it.
Were you still at Wiednitz?
Yes.
In May 42?
Up to about May 42, and then fortunately, I was moved to a place called Berghammer, spelt Burghammer. And from then on, my fortunes changed completely. I went to a much larger camp and far better conditions. It was in charge, the man in charge then was a German Feldwebel.
Was this a work camp or a Stalin?
Work, similar, it's brown coal, it's a similar place where this brown coal is taken to the factory and made into briquettes. And our job in those days would be to move the railway lines about. So that was a job whereby you had to pick up track and move it. Which, when you work in the snow, and if you, of course, you cannot see, you've got snow 2 feet deep. And if you tread on a metal band, one end is under your foot and the other one, the other part of it comes up and hits you in the shin, which is rather painful. And that's the bands which are around the sleepers, as we would call them. And imagine walking about in snow with a piece of railway line on his shoulders, a 15-metre length of rail, spread over 22 men, and the man in front of you bends his knees, so you're on your knees then, and you're walking about in snow 2 feet deep, with railway lines on his shoulder, taking it to the truck. And then, as you come up alongside the truck, all those on the inside would have to come out. Understand? You put the railway line on the wagon. And somebody, maybe a bit late, getting their fingers out. And all the fingers are left on the top where the rail is coming to contact with their hand. And there's four fingers left on the truck. And that sort of thing. So life, there'd be quite a good number of accidents, sometimes fatal, in the mine.
And Berghammer was in the same area as Wiednitz?
Yes, in that area, Upper Silesia, in between Leipzig and Dresden.
And you say the German in charge was more reasonable?
More reasonable until he got some snaps into him. And he had the old red nose from drinking snaps. And if things didn't go right, he'd start polishing his gun. And throwing his arms about with the gun in his hand. And if you didn't fully cooperate, then there was trouble.
Did you cooperate with him?
Generally, the sensible way is yes, but it's not sensible to argue with a person like that who he got a gun in his hand, and of course somebody going to come off second best. And one of my pals was one of the finest men I've met. He refused to work on the grounds that he didn't get enough food. And as a result of that, he was beaten up. And, of course, moved to another camp.
Did you see him beaten up?
I didn't see him, but I saw him afterwards. They use these... You've got these wooden clogs, which have got a sharp edge on them. And, of course, he was set about... When we said we would keep his clothes and show it to the Red Cross, of course, it never materialised.
Why never materialised?
Well, the Red Cross never came, and he was moved to another place.
Had the food improved by now?
No. They didn't have it to give it to us. But we relied on Red Cross parcels from about May, June, 42. But like all good things, once the second front started, that was a finish.
Were you still in Berghammer by the time the second front started?
Oh, yes. And we knew the second front was imminent by listening to 9 o'clock news. Unofficially, of course.
The BBC 9 o'clock?
BBC, yeah.
Mm. Where did you get the radio from?
Oh, I don't know where we got it from, but we had one. And we'd take the old bulb out the socket and plug in. And the chap with a set of earphones would take down all the news and put it on paper.
Was it a German radio or one that you've made yourself?
I would imagine that it would be a German radio.
What would have happened if the Germans had found you were listening to the BBC?
Oh, it would be in big trouble, I think. But we always got on to them, said, look, can we have a radio? And you can control which station we listen to, but can we have one? So we always kept on to them about getting one. And, of course, all the time we had our own.
What was the news they were giving about the war?
Oh, of course, favourable. We knew the Second Front started. And having seen the American planes over in the daylight, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of them at a time. We knew, of course, what was happening. What was seeing the mass, those up top, and getting the news what was happening on the Russian front. And all the time, of course, things were getting better. Oh, yes. Until such times, of course, following the second front,